Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Today, we explore a phenomenon that is increasing in popularity around the world, one that is a billion-dollar industry in this country and which continues to grow as an economic engine. I'm talking about agritourism. Small family farms have increasingly turned to agritourism as a way to diversify their incomes and survive while competing against bigger and bigger commercial operations. In this state alone, nearly 1,000 farms include agritourism as part of their business. In fact, North Carolina boasts the third highest number of farms engaging in this, behind only Texas and California. This is peak season for agritourism, so we're going to delve into exactly what it is, what's driving its increasing importance, and more this hour. Danielle McCall should know all about this. She is a third-generation co-owner-operator of Steps Hillcrest Orchard in Hendersonville. She joins us along with Barbara Volk, the mayor of Hendersonville, and Whitney Nolenberg is associate professor in the Department of Parks, Recreation, and Tourism Management at North Carolina State University. Good morning to you all. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Mike.
Thanks for being here. Mayor Volk, I'm going to start with you. I'm going to find out how things are this morning in Hendersonville now that we're several weeks past Hurricane Helene. What is the situation there today?
We are very fortunate. We are in cleanup mode, cleaning up the trees that came down, cleaning up the trash and building materials that were damaged during the storm. The storms, we had the rain before the actual Helene situation. Other than the businesses that were very directly impacted by the storms, the rest of the town is open and operating. Downtown itself was very fortunate. We had extremely limited damage. And half of Main Street really never lost power or water. So we had businesses, restaurants that were able to operate through that very first week afterward. We were very fortunate in Hendersonville. That there was not damage and loss of life and property, but as a community, we are doing quite well.
So I was going to ask you about power and water, because you're only 26, I think, minutes or miles southeast of Asheville, and they were inundated with the water problems and electricity. I don't know that they've gotten their power back. I know that water is being very slowly restored to that area, and they had numbers of washed out roads, including portions of I-40 and, of course, the Blue Ridge Parkway and local roads going up into the mountains. Did you experience anything close to that?
Not that severe. Sections of town never did lose water. A few minor sections never lost electricity. Potable water is fully back to virtually all of our systems. We were able to bring industries back online and able to sell bulk water to some other areas that need it. Electricity, again, pretty much all of the county is back with electricity. We, again, just very fortunate. We had great systems, great staff to get things up and running relatively quickly.
And of course, all of this came about just at the very beginning of the fall leaf watching season, which is peak tourist season.
Yes.
For areas of the mountains. Some of those areas are essentially closed to tourists. They you have no place to stay, no place to eat. They're inundated with their own problems that they're trying to recover from, and they've asked tourists not to come. And in fact, many tourists can't get in. That is not the case, however, in your town, in Hendersonville, correct?
That is correct. And there are a lot of other communities throughout the mountains that are open, as they say, open for business everywhere from Brevard, Waynesville, Weaverville, Robbinsville, Nantahala. You can get online or give a phone call. People here would welcome visitors. You, as I say, it's best to check ahead of time. There are some places that are still not really able to handle tourists, but the rest, yes, please, please come. We have businesses that are depending on the fall tourism and would love to see folks up here. I know Waynesville this past weekend had their fall festival and had a good crowd. So, yes, please check out the location and do come to those of us who are open.
Danielle, you're a farmer. You own Steps Hillcrest Orchard. The mayor mentioned trees being down. We know that the trees were down all over the area, and you run an orchard. That can't be good news. How are you? Let's just put it simply. How are you?
That's a great question, and I'm not really sure I know the answer, to be honest. Ask me maybe in a couple of months, but as far as our orchard goes, our orchard is in great shape. Our farm is in great shape. We had several, you know, hardwood trees come down with some cleanup involved in that. We had some apple trees blow over, but apple trees tend to have very strong roots, which is great. And we had some young trees blow over. Most of those were able to, you know, put back up and resecure, and they'll be fine. Our situation is the road that our farm is located on, and it suffered tremendous damage in both directions. Normally, you can access our orchard from one of two ways off of Pace Road, and there is damage in both directions, pretty severe damage.
Is that why you've been closed, essentially, since the hurricane?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's why we've been closed. We've not been able to reopen.
North Carolina Agricultural Commissioner Steve Troxler has called Hurricane Helene, quote, the worst disaster the Tar Heel State has ever seen. And he specifically references the apple crop in Henderson County. Things don't seem that bad from what you've said, at least at your farm. Talk about that. How bad is it for other people out there who are in the orchard business?
Well, again, it's kind of like Barbara said, it's in Hendersonville, things were not so bad. It's very localized where the damage is. And we have seen orchards that suffered tremendous damage. It really depends on where you are. And although our address says Hendersonville, we're actually in Henderson County. We're outside of Hendersonville. And there are, you know, portions of the county that suffered just tremendous devastation. So it really depends on where you are. And where the water was. I mean, that's it. Where was the water? Where did the water flow? And what damage did the water do?
Mayor, there's been a lot of mis and disinformation about the situation in the mountains and about FEMA and about state help not being adequate for areas that need it or for people who live in stricken areas. Have you found that to be the case?
It felt like the state and FEMA were very slow responding. I think that's been the main concern, is why weren't they here the day after?
Is that because of access problems?
Some access problems, but they, again, it was just so much worse than we ever expected that I think they were caught a little flat-footed as well. But the FEMA offices are up and running in most areas now, most towns. The state has, we appreciate, appropriated funds to help with rebuilding and cleanup and all many things that have to be considered in a situation like this. So things are moving much better now. And people that I have talked to that have dealt with FEMA said it was not a terribly long wait in line, and they felt that they had good service. So we're moving along. I think everything is working much more smoothly than it did at first.
And I don't know how much help Steps Hillcrest Orchard needs from FEMA or from state authorities from this storm, but maybe you did. Have you received any kind of help, any kind of monetary support, FEMA inspectors or volunteers coming to you to volunteer help or to ask what you need or help with cleanup, et cetera, or do you just not need that?
I think the type of help we need is probably outside the scope of what FEMA does. Again, we haven't really suffered much physical damage, infrastructure damage, that type of thing here at our farm. What we're suffering is loss of revenue. And just to kind of put some numbers on that, we work year round, we pay expenses year round, but our income comes in 11 weeks of the fall. And 55% of that income comes in the last 5 weeks of the fall. And that starts when Helene hit. So we typically bring in 55% of our yearly income beginning the Friday that Helene hit. And 40% of that 55 is in those first 3 weeks. So we've already lost that.
And how much of that is due to what we're going to talk about in the remainder of this program, which is agritourism versus just harvesting your crop and selling it to market?
So agritourism really has helped us to mitigate a lot of the risk that agriculture usually is susceptible to. So even in a year when we have significant apple crop loss, we have so diversified what we do here on our farm that as long as we have some apples for people to pick, and we've figured out ways because we have had freeze, we have had hail, we have had significant crop damage in just recent years, we have figured out ways to mitigate that by offering other things like sunflowers and grapes and a corn maze and a pumpkin patch and apple cider donuts and apple cider slushies and all kinds of other things that have helped us really to mitigate the risk associated with agriculture. I see you have a question.
No, I have to take a break. That's why my hand is in the air.
Sorry.
And we're going to talk about all of that as we go through the hour here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Sorry to interrupt, but it's housekeeping. Some of the farms in Western North Carolina, Danielle, have decided not to harvest or sell their crops for fear that they may have been damaged in some way by contaminated water. I mean, there's fear that the murky waters that resulted from the torrent of rain and things coming down the mountain could have had toxins that could have been absorbed by crops and, in fact, could impact future crops as well. I take it that's not a concern for you, given your location and the minimal damage that you suffered.
Correct. Yeah, I don't think that's something that we're facing here on our farm, no.
And since your farm is closed, and others likely are as well, for now, will you be able to recoup that lost income? Because you mentioned that you make money 11 weeks of the year. You spend the whole rest of the year prepping and growing and nurturing and doing whatever you have to do to make the apple crop healthy and abundant. And in 11 weeks, that's where you make the money. So a lot of those weeks are gone. Can you recoup that loss?
So let me mention, first of all, that a lot of the orchards are open. I serve on our county's tourism board. I'm the vice chair of that board. So I want to mention that a lot of the orchards are open. There are a lot of places to visit here in the county that their access wasn't affected. So they are able to be open. So we are the outlier on that.
And Barbara, I have 30 seconds left. Barbara, will Hendersonville be able to recoup the losses from this hurricane?
It'll be difficult, but our merchants are open and ready for business. So we hope folks will come on up.
So when we come back, we're going to talk about what we plan to talk about on this program from the get-go, and that is agritourism and what it is and the importance it plays in the role of farmers. We're coming right back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about a growing phenomenon, a phenomenon that's both growing in number and size, but also of importance, and that is agritourism. North Carolina is third in the country in the importance of agritourism behind California and Texas. We're here with Barbara Volk, who is the mayor of Hendersonville. Daniel McCall is a farmer and co-owner of Steps Hillcrest Orchard in Henderson County. And Whitney Nolenberg is associate professor of parks, recreation, and tourism management at NC State University. And let me start this segment with you, Whitney, because we need a basic question answered, and that is, what is agritourism? How would you define it?
Thanks, Mike. So agritourism is defined as any activities on a working farm, and that working farm definition is very important, that the activities should engage in education or leisure outcomes for the participants. So working farm means that this is a farm that is actually generating and selling crops or livestock, even oysters here in North Carolina. We have folks who are growing oysters, and they have folks who come out on their farms and engage in educational and leisure activities. But of course, today we've been talking about sort of the classic model of agritourism, which are things like our orchards, pumpkin farms, and that is, as you said earlier, Mike, a really important activity, particularly this time of year around the harvest season when folks are out there for that you-pick activity, which is one of those things that we often think of as an example of agritourism.
So how long has this been a thing where people come to the farm and pick their own orchards or strawberries or choose their Christmas tree, whatever it may be? How long has this been a thing?
Sure. It's been, an aspect of farm life for a long time. It's often something that
define long. How long is long?
I don't know that we can actually put a number on that, Mike. I can't give you the first date of agritourism, because I think it's been an element of, hey, you know, welcoming people onto your farm to do some harvesting has been a part of the agricultural experience. I would have to assume for since we've had farms, you know, it may be your neighbor, it may be family, but welcoming people onto your space to do that activity for leisure, something that's been around a very long time.
I think for the purposes of this discussion, it's a little bit bigger than inviting members of your family to come and help you harvest the crop. In 2010, the Wall Street Journal wrote an article about what they called agritainment, in which they pointed out that only about 45% of the 2.2 million farms nationwide show positive net cash income from farming. Now, that was in 2010, so things may have changed. They may have gotten better, may have gotten worse. They need other sources of revenue in order to survive. And in that one article, one farmer noted, quote, "People love to be entertained more than they love to eat." I'm not sure that's true, but okay. Is that still the case today, Whitney?
Sure. We're definitely seeing more consumers interested in that experience. And so I'll say it even goes beyond the entertainment aspect of it to say that people are looking for a visit that is going to deliver something beyond just, I'm going to go and pick the apples, which is great. And we love to have them do that. But there are so many other ways that they can engage in those educational leisure activities on farms, whether that is having a corn maze, whether that is having the pumpkin cannons where they're you know, shooting pumpkins out over a field, whether that's a petting zoo. We've even seen farms start to diversify into things like craft classes. I was just out at a farm a couple of weeks ago with some of our students from NC State, and the farmer was hosting a local artist who would come onto the farm to do barn quilt painting classes. And so you were in this beautiful environment. You were doing sort of learned paint by numbers kind of thing with an artist who had a beautiful template for you to follow along. And it was this great social space to bring your family or friends. And in that context, it was very focused on an adult experience. They weren't welcoming, you know, kids into that space. So we typically see a lot of farms focused on family-oriented activities.
But this is the farm as a theme park, and I want to come back to that a little bit later on in this conversation, because that seems like a different scale. skill. Danielle, I mentioned that this is something that smaller farms engage in to help their bottom line and to help them stay competitive with these big agribusiness collective farms. In another article, the New York Times wrote about the same time as that Wall Street Journal article about 14 years ago, the owner of a company that designs and cuts corn mazes for farmers said it's virtually impossible to make a living just off traditional farming on a small farm. Have you found that to be the case?
So we've been doing agritourism on our farm for over 50 years. I would venture to say before the term was coined. My grandparents started it offering pick your own apples in the late 1960s. So we have been doing pick your own and agritourism for well over 50 years here on our farm. For a long time, it was mainly just the pick your own apples. We sold some Cokes, we sold some acorn squash we grew, different things like that, but it was mostly the apples. And it was smaller numbers of customers picking lots and lots of fruit that they took home and they put up for the winter. That has changed. We now see more customers, but they're picking fewer apples at a time. And we've added other things as well, but we have been doing what would be considered agritourism for over 50 years on our farm. In the last probably 20 years ago, we added educational tours for school kids. We've been doing those for over 20 years. That's my mom's baby. We added a pumpkin patch 20 years ago. And then in the last 10 years, we have added lots of things like the corn maze, like the bakery and the slushies and the apple cannons and the jump pad and just lots of other things. But we have been an agritourism farm for over 50 years.
And you've said that you make your money in 11 weeks, harvest time. So, and obviously the coming to pick apples is something you do at harvest time. How important is that aspect of farming to your business, agritourism?
That is essentially 100% of our business. We are
really
basically exclusively an agritourism farm. In a huge crop year, if we've got a friend who's got a crew that can come in and pick something that's left, we will do that, but we don't have the labor to pick apples. That's what the customers come and do. We are a pick-your-own farm almost exclusively.
And yet, and this could be wrong, because what does the Wall Street Journal know about farms? they say that picking your own apples can be expensive for the orchards. They say that there are a lot of extra costs involved in allowing customers to pick their own fruit. Have you found that to be the case? And if so, what are those extra costs to you?
So there definitely are challenges when you welcome people onto your farm. Disrespect of the place, theft, those type of things. It's minimal. It's frustrating. It's extremely frustrating. I'll be honest with you. Although I did say to a friend last week, I will never again complain about customers on the farm. Never, ever, ever. After having an October with no customers, I will never, ever complain. But there's waste, there's theft, there's, just a lack of respect for your place. But that, it's minimal. It really is minimal. And we charge enough to make up for that, frankly.
Okay, well, there is that. So Whitney, what do you hear from other farmers who engage in this? Because, for instance, with her situation where she's an orchard, you've got a lot of people, families with children coming through picking apples. Maybe the apple slips out of their hand and it falls onto the ground, and they leave that there because it might be bruised. So that's a loss of a piece of fruit that will never go to market and never be bought or sold. How much of that just inexperience on the part of well-meaning individuals ends up losing money for farmers who engage in agritourism?
Yeah, Mike, I think that there's definitely an aspect of that. Certainly with fragile crops like berries, there may be more of that. And as Danielle sort of mentioned there, the farmer has to really approach this from a business model of trying to understand where that waste can occur and charging things appropriately to still make money on that. I'm not sure that we can point to specific numbers on how much food waste occurs in that sort of space, but it is something that they have to think about, along with things like liability insurance and ensuring that there's adequate coverage for people who are on the farm. That's a real challenge for a lot of folks, and thinking about some of those other costs that come along with having the public in your space.
And Danielle, you've said that. Well, I'll ask this question of Whitney. I'm sorry. We'll come back to you in a second, Danielle. When it comes to apples, some mid-sized farms, Whitney, will they depend on agritourism for cash to tide them over, because a lot of their crop, if they're a bigger farm, will go into storage units that are climate controlled and be sold through the year to wholesalers and then make it to your grocery store that way. But that's a crop sitting there in a warehouse, not generating income. So they're depending on agritourism for some quick cash to tide them over. How big a phenomenon is that? How important is that to many of these farms, whether it's apples or some other crop?
Yeah, I think if you're thinking about this as just a diversified revenue stream, right? Another way for them to be utilizing the space where they have the opportunity to create revenue, that is absolutely something that more and more farmers are bringing into their business models to say, this we need to we don't want this big peak in the middle of when we have harvest as our one way to create revenue. How can we sort of smooth that out into some other times of the year and to bring in that revenue while we're doing other things. That is a big motivation for a lot of farmers to engage in agritourism. And you can see farms even looking for ways to do crops and do different activities at different times of the year. Danielle, you mentioned that you also have flowers and things like that. Those may come on around the same time as the apples, but they might also help you kind of space out some of that a little bit before peak apple time or after peak apple time, to just be really getting as much revenue from the acreage that they have as possible.
So, Danielle, I mentioned that you have a bunch of well-meaning amateurs roaming your orchards, picking apples, and there may be some loss of crop because somebody drops an apple and they don't want that apple anymore because it's been on the ground and it might be bruised. And then there are people who maybe wander through and the kid takes a bite out of an apple and starts eating the apple and throws the core on the ground, and that's an apple they didn't pay for. But you did mention that you have, I guess, a price of admission that covers any potential losses from that. Are you an outlier in that, or do most of these farms charge a fee to get in, and do you then also charge for the apples that you harvest and you bring to the front desk on the way out? How does that work?
So we do not charge an admission charge. That is a common practice across the country, even more so in the eastern part of the state. Here in the West, you don't see it. We're not doing it here. And we're just honestly, we're hesitant to do that, to say you've got to pay just to come on the place. But we try to charge enough for those apples that people pick, and they prepay, they purchase a container that they're going to go out in the orchard and fill up. And so we just try to charge enough to cover that waste in the cost of that container. One issue is people pick a few more than the container will hold. And for whatever reason, a lot of people feel like that's okay just to take home with them. They don't think about the fact that those are now apples we can't sell to somebody else. And that if everybody does that, that's a pretty, it can add up to a lot of fruit. It can add up to a lot of money. And that is it's a challenge. It's a challenge. And again, it's a frustrating challenge, but it's part of what we do here and we deal
How
with it.
big is your orchard?
So our farm is about 100 acres, and about 40, 45 acres of that is in orchard. And then we've got sunflower fields, pumpkin fields, other activities, grapes. We grow grapes.
So in a good year, how many apples get carted away? How many apples can you take? How many apples can tourists come in and pick?
A lot. I am a numbers girl. I like to look at the numbers, but I mean, I it really it is it varies so much depending on the crop, depending on the weather, depending on just so many factors. So many factors.
And economically, it seems, Whitney, it depends on what crop you're harvesting or you're allowing people to participate in the harvest of to determine how you charge, either for the individual pumpkin or apple, or whether or not you charge admission. What is the case in most of the state? How do they determine this, these farmers?
So I think it really depends on sort of the probably some of the length of operation. Danielle, I think your operation is really quite unique in how long it's been operating. And you, I know, have a lot of folks who return every year to come and pick apples with you, and they have expectations of, I'm going to pay for the bucket. I'm not going to pay a ticket price. I'm going to, you know, not have that expectation. So I think some of it is history of the place, Mike.
It's Charlotte Talks, and we're talking about agritourism, a big phenomenon here in North Carolina and around the country this morning on WFAE. Barbara Volk is here. She's the mayor of Hendersonville. There are about 1,000 farms in the state that participate in some aspect of what we're talking about this morning, agritourism. Do you have a figure at all on the number of farms in your area that are part of this phenomenon?
Well, we have the numbers I could come up with. There's about over 30 roadside markets of various types, official farmers markets, local produce markets. There are, let me see, don't know if I have the exact number, but the other aspect of agritourism is something like we have in Hendersonville with our Apple Festival, which is agriculture focused, not directly on the farm. But if we didn't have those apples out there, we wouldn't have an Apple Festival, obviously. And that in itself brings in $12 million for Hendersonville and surrounding areas. So these festivals are another aspect which draws lots of people. We get 250,000 people over the weekend of Apple Festival, and they don't just stay there, they go out to the orchards, to the other farms, to the wineries, the meadery, the cidery, all these other varying aspects besides just apples that are available in Henderson County.
When we come back, I want to talk about the economic impact, not just to farmers, but also to towns that are in the middle of all these farms, and this whole idea of the farm as theme park and what that does for and to the people who run these farms and for the tourists who come. Why do they come? We'll find out about that when we come back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about agritourism, which plays a big role in the economic lives of farmers here and around the country. Barbara Volk is the mayor of Hendersonville. Her town benefits from this because agritourism is exactly that, tourism. Danielle McCall also benefits. She's the co-owner of Steps Hillcrest Orchard. She's a third-generation farmer in that area where people can come and pick apples and pumpkins and other things. And Whitney Nolenberg is Associate Professor of Park Recreation and Tourism Management at North Carolina State University. I want to talk about the idea of these farms as theme parks, because when you open your doors and you're doing things like letting people pick your crops for you and taking them home with them, there's more to it than that. There's other entertainment, and you have to decorate, and you have to put on the hoopla for them. The New York Times called agritourism the new cash crop for many of these farmers. Whitney, is that an appropriate description? And it also seems to me that this is a very different skill. Running a theme park is different than running a farm. So how do these two come together?
Well, I think we want to caution conflating agritourism and theme parks, because I'm pretty confident most farmers are not getting into the business of being the next Disney World. They are looking for a space certainly to generate revenue and as a space to teach and make people really value agriculture as an important part of our society and our culture. So certainly, Mike, your point about it being a different skill. Yes, it really is, at the end of the day, a service or experience, as I was talking about before, that designing an experience for people and thinking about all those points of contact, everything from the minute they look at your website or your social media page and make the decision to, hey, I'm going to travel to Hendersonville to experience Steps Orchard. That initial decision to go, to showing up, to parking, to walking up to you know where they enter to start their experience. I mean, steps, the trees are right there. You pull in and you see the trees and you know you're at an orchard. You feel mm-hmm. immersed in that the moment you arrive. So it is very much a skill in thinking about those.
And Danielle, you mentioned that your family's been engaged in this for about 50 years now. So you're not a newcomer to this. You have experience. You understand what's needed for this. But I'm sure that the nature of your operation has changed in 50 years. It's expanded. What you offer the public today is probably a lot more than you offered them when you opened the doors to this 50 years ago. Farming seems to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, to be a relatively, it's an occupation of solitude. You're out there with your crops, you're doing whatever you have to do to make them grow and then harvest them. It is not greeting people at the front gate, welcoming them in, having a festive atmosphere, guiding them through the orchard, telling them how to pick. It's a very different skill. How have you adapted? How do other people in your business adapt as they get into this, because they need to for cash flow?
Well, just a couple of things I would say for us. Number one, we want to be seen as an authentic farm. We do not want to look like a theme park, for sure. Number two, I'm not a farmer. I think it does a disservice to my papa, my dad, my husband to say I'm a farmer. I'm a assistant to the farmer and I have a business mind. So that's my role here on the farm. My mom's role is education. She was a public school teacher. So we've all got different things that we do here on the farm. But because we have been doing this for so long, I saw my grandparents welcome people here. That is part of our DNA here. And so I don't know any other way to do it, honestly. We have always welcomed guests. It's a part of who we are. It's a part of who our family is. I'm sure that moving from not doing that into doing that is a big change, but I that's not my experience just because this is what we've always done. But for us, it really is about education. I feel like we do a huge service to our state, to our citizens, by the education we do, from school kids who visit here, thousands every year, just to the people who come on our farm that are so far removed from the farm that they can see us, what we do, they can see the farm. I think we provide a huge service in that way too.
Danielle, you were not substantially damaged by the hurricane, but other farms certainly were. And we began this conversation at the top of the hour talking about Helene and what its impact has been on farms and other businesses, simply because they were destroyed or they were hurt in some way, or you just can't get to them right now because of road closures, etc. You have said that you would like, you hope that the state will get around to targeting some relief specifically at agritourism farms. Talk about that.
Yeah, so I spent the early part of last week sending a lot of emails the more I thought about this. I do believe that agritourism is a way to mitigate risk, and we have done that well. But this Helene was a perfect storm at the perfect time. My husband and I were talking about this last night. Right in the middle of harvest, at the peak of harvest, when the huge revenue, when the most revenue comes in. And then the inability to get customers to the farm. Just for us, it's the road damage, but even for other people, they lost a couple of weeks, or they're going to see diminished revenue. And this is the time when we definitely are going to need some help from the state. We are going to need some relief specifically targeted at agritourism and the loss of revenue. And again, I would just stress, you know, the service we provide in education, and I think we help preserve farmland. We have been able to buy two adjoining tracts in the last 5 years, keep that in farmland. It's a lot of debt we have that we need to continue to pay on. And when you lose 55% of your revenue, it makes that hard. So we are hopeful that the state will approve some relief specifically for agritourism farms and their loss of revenue.
The other thing that this does, obviously, is keep, as you just mentioned, you acquire two additional tracts of land and you're able to keep that land in the farming business as opposed to somebody coming in and building houses on it. And the more we build houses on this, as much as we need housing, you got to eat. If we don't eat, we don't live. And so we need these farms to be active and productive. Whitney, As I mentioned earlier in the program, North Carolina is third in the country for agritourism behind Texas and California. Why? What's so special about us?
Yeah, great question, Mike. So North Carolina is one of the most rural states in the country, and that's a bit strange to think about, but our population is really in rural areas. And that means that we have a lot of people who are engaged in farming in different ways, whether it's a small pick your own flower farm up to larger operations like Stepps Hillcrest Orchard. And that means that all across the state, from Murphy to Manio, you have places that create these experiences on farms for people. Because of the history of agriculture in the state, because we have a lot of great natural resources that support agriculture in the state, it just generates a space for that to be a really vibrant part of our economy.
And even though we may be a rural state, for the most part, we do have these enormous urban areas which drive the economic life of the state, it seems to me. And there are a lot of people in those areas who have never set foot on a farm, don't know what a chicken looks like in real life or a pig. They only know what it looks like when it's in Saran wrap in a tray in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. So what is it about going to the farm? I'm going to ask Danielle this question. What is it about going to the farm that is so fascinating for these city slickers?
Well, I don't know what it is for them exactly, but I can tell you that from being here on the farm and seeing them come, and we do have lots of folks coming from Charlotte, from Raleigh, from Columbia, South Carolina, and Charleston, South Carolina. This is what I always tell our teenagers that come here to work with us. People are genuinely happy when they visit our farm. This is a great first job. You're not working at the dentist office. You're not, you know, people are happy. And farms just make people happy. I'm just going to be honest. They do. We call our sunflowers buckets of happiness. I mean, that's what it is. When people step onto our farm, for the most part, they are happy to be here. And what is it? I don't know. Does it take them back to a simpler time? Does it relieve some of the stress? I'm sure it does. I mean, we say harvesting family memories here. That's what we've been saying for years. And we do have generations and generations that come back. There is something about stepping on a farm, good, clean mountain air. It does the body good. I don't know.
And there are farmers who engage in things that have nothing to do with farming, like corn mazes. They come in and they take their corn crop after they've harvested it, I guess, and they cut to trails in it, and it becomes this corn maze. And Barbara, the New York Times spoke to a farmer in New York State who says he does this, and he's the average person who comes into the maze spends $12 on admission, on food, on other amusements there, and he said that it's more profitable than growing crops for wholesale, and that's for sure, he said. It also seems to me that these people who come to pick their own apples or pumpkins, or they come into Hendersonville, they come into the towns that that are adjacent to these farms. Is that the case with Hendersonville? How many of the people who come through there, who eat in your restaurants, who shop in your shops, came to do something else, like go to the farm and pick apples?
A very high percentage, like 80% of the people will come and visit downtown Hendersonville, eat in our restaurants. So those who do it for the weekend stay in the hotels. One figure I saw said that the Hendersonville in the Henderson County economy, $75 million comes from agritourism. And that equates to $4 million in sales tax. So we depend on that agritourism to support downtown Hendersonville and the surrounding areas. Same with Henderson County. We welcome people in because we have a lovely area, but there are things that people want to do besides wander Main Street. I admit some people want to go outside of downtown, and to have these agritourism opportunities is definitely important to us in Hendersonville. We do everything we can to support them and to encourage people to get outside of just Hendersonville.
A lot of people, Danielle, make it a family tradition to go to the pumpkin patch and pick out their pumpkin for their jack-o'-lantern. They make the annual pilgrimage to the Christmas tree farm to pick out the tree. Those are all holiday traditions. Can traditions be formed and become sustainable for farmers outside of those things that are attached to holidays?
Well, I mean, would you say the fall is a holiday? I don't know. I mean, for us, the fall is the season. It's a long season. It's not Christmas necessarily. It's not Halloween. It's just the fall season. So for us, it's the whole fall.
And theme parks, Whitney, have to update themselves from time to time. Even Disney World has to open and close attractions to keep people coming back for more. What can farmers do? What have farmers done to keep this idea fresh and to keep people coming back year after year? Or maybe they skip a year and they come back every other year, but nonetheless, they come back. What do they have to do, if anything?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it is there's definitely a creative element to this. I mean, farmers are creative, right? They know what they do. They can do in terms of producing their crops and raising their livestock, but they are creative folks who are willing to try new things when it makes sense for them. So looking at different opportunities, listening to their customers, listening to what they're interested in, whether that's purchasing different types of value-added products, if those are made on site, maybe like an apple butter or apple pie, things like that. We've seen a lot of people who have farm markets integrating other craft opportunities, whether that's local handmade pottery, art, things like that. We see people even looking into things like lodging and accommodation. So bringing on spaces for people to actually stay on the farm as well.
We're talking about agritourism in North Carolina this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It strikes me that if farmers are busy operating these corn mazes and giving hay rides and allowing children to pet the farm animals and allow people to pick apples or pumpkins or strawberries or whatever it may be, they're not farming. So how difficult, Danielle, is it to strike a happy balance here?
Again, I think it's something we're used to doing, but yeah, I mean, the grass still has to be mowed, right? Even when you've got customers on your farm every single day, work has to be done in the pumpkin patch or a flower field has to be mowed down. I mean, it definitely is a challenge. We're not working 8-hour days. I can assure you that. We're working 7 days a week here. Yeah. Our family is, we're working 7 days a week when we're open, and those can be 10 to 12 hour days. That's not at all unusual. So it is a super, super busy time for us.
Whitney, people who run shops and restaurants and hotels are in the hospitality business. These front of house operations make you interface with the customers, and it requires a personality among those workers that farmers may not have. So tell me, from your experience as somebody who deals with tourism, does it take a special kind of person? Does it take a special kind of training? Is it difficult for farmers to learn how to deal with these outsiders coming onto their land?
Yeah, that is very true, Mike. That's a good observation. And when my extension colleagues and I are talking with farmers who are interested in getting into agritourism, the first thing we ask them is, do you actually like to be around people? Because if you don't look into agritourism. Or find someone who does in your family. Agritourism is a really great way to engage lots of family members in farming. And Danielle, you alluded to this earlier that, you all have different roles in your family at Stubbs Hillcrest. It might be, you might not be out there working in the orchards, but you're thinking about the business side of things. So finding that person within the family or finding someone that you can hire on to do that frontline work is super important.
I have about 30 seconds left, Barbara. I know you've said that your area, Hendersonville, was not badly damaged. Part of the town always stayed open. It's still open. You want people to come. You want tourists to be there. How can people find out which areas are open for business and inviting tourists? I have 15 seconds.
Go to visit hendersonvillenc.org, click on the tab that says things to do, and you will see another link for apples, farms, and markets.
And that's just in one area, so I'm sure every town has their own version of that. Barbara Volk is the mayor of Hendersonville. Daniel McCall is co-owner of Steps Hillcrest Orchard. And Whitney Nolenberg is associate professor of park recreation and tourism at NC State. Thanks.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.